the diseases. Touching them on a very emotional level is going to have the widest impact, Quinlan said. CLI joins Portland-based Medical Teams International and Mercy Corps in extending help to West Africa.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Doug McVeigh, Jim Thompson, Jared Dantzler. Our engineer is Sequoyna Wright. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews, or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath, 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River, 91.9 FM. I'm Emily Young.
I'm Jared Dantzler. And stay tuned now for an interview conducted by KBOO reporters. At 7, it's Democracy Now!
That's coming up tomorrow.
7 a.m. tomorrow.
Right.
At 8, it's Wednesday Talk Radio with Paul Rowland, talking with Thomas Lindsay, the co-founder and executive director of the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. The topic will state of the community rights movement and electoral politics. At 9, Political Perspectives with Lisa Loving and Joanne Hardesty. The show is called Elections, the Day After. At 10, it's Air Cascadia with Chris Andre, and then Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein at 10:15. And at 11, it's The Fabulous Bike Show. Stay tuned now for live interview, news in depth, with KBOO reporters.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
This is News in Depth. My name is Paul Rowland, and I'm speaking with Chris Dixon, author of Another Politics, talking across today's transformative movements. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Paul. It's really great to be with you.
Great. It's great to hear you. You're up in Olympia, right?
Yeah, that's right. I've been doing some events today at Evergreen State College, and I'm doing one tonight at downtown Olympia.
And you're coming to Portland tomorrow as part of your Another Politics tour. And let me just give that right off the bat. Your speaking engagements are going to be tomorrow from 6 to 8 p.m. With Jobs with Justice at 1500 Northeast Irving Street, number 585, Taking Ourselves Seriously workshop. And then the day after, Thursday, November 6th, from 6 p.m., room 101, Smith Memorial Student Union, Portland State University, a public lecture. So, and then you're going to be in Corvallis and Eugene, and we can talk more about that at the very end of the program. So tell us about what went into this Another Politics tour. Obviously, you wrote this book, which has been some time in the making. Talk about the book and what went into that.
For sure. So this book is based on dozens and dozens of interviews that I conducted with activists and organizers across the United States and Canada. I basically traveled around and tried to find people who were very experienced and also really thoughtful about the work that they're doing in a bunch of different sectors. And I was trying to dig into some of the big and hard questions that we face about organizing, about strategy, about leadership, about dealing with social hierarchies of oppression and privilege as they come up within activist spaces. And I was looking to try and compile insights and lessons that came out of these conversations and put them into a format that could be usable and that could actually spread many of these really wonderful ideas more broadly into lots of different movements. So that was the kind of overall basis of this book project.
And so you've you currently live in Canada, right?
That's right, yeah. I'm from the U.S. originally. I actually grew up in Alaska, and I lived in the Northwest for many years. But for the last more than 7 years, I've been living in the Canadian context.
Yeah, I read on your website that you participated in the launching of the Direct Action Network in 1999, which kind of was the organizing for the Seattle WTO protests, which has sort of achieved a semi-mythical status at this point. And so that was obviously informed your activism, that kind of heyday of the what was known as the global justice movement. And then after that, you became aware of some of the limitations of our efforts at sort of the summit hopping, I guess. And you said we weren't building long-term resistance movement, we were mobilizing for a protest. So talk a little bit about, you know, how that informed your activism after that.
Certainly. I mean, my experience of the global justice movement was simultaneously one of great elation. It was amazing to be in the streets and experience this kind of popular power where, you know, in the case of the Seattle protest in 1999 against the World Trade Organization, we actually managed to severely impact their meetings and shut them down and in some sense actually affect the global conversation about inequality and globalization. And at the same time, it was an experience of realizing that we had some pretty severe limitations in how we were doing that kind of mobilization and that kind of movement building. And some of those limitations were related to the fact that we weren't often thinking about how to mobilize outside of the constituencies that we were most familiar with. Those of us, for example, within the Direct Action Network, were often closely working with primarily anarchists, direct action environmentalists, and international solidarity activists. And we were often having some trouble connecting with more kind of community-based efforts. And at the same time, I think another one of the limitations we were struggling with was with building longer-term resilient movements. And we were very good at kind of moving from protest to protest, but in terms of building community-based grassroots power that could actually challenge these institutions in their local ways on a day-to-day basis, that was much, much harder. And so certainly that experience inspired some of the kinds of questions that I wanted to go out and talk to people about. And certainly I didn't talk to just people who were involved in global justice stuff. I went out to try and talk with people who are involved in, say, organizing against prisons, who are coming out of anti-racist feminist politics and trying to build different kinds of institutions and organizations, or people who are involved in the Canadian context, especially with migrant justice organizing, which has a really important radical contribution to make.
And I noticed also before you got involved with the Direct Action Network in Seattle, you were in you were at the Vancouver Summit of the Asian Pacific Economic Cooperation, and you said you were inspired by ways many activists had grounded their efforts in solidarity with indigenous resistance and movements in the global south. And there's a lot happening in Canada right now. I don't think people, you know, this side of the border know much about the really blossoming of indigenous resistance, of course, in reaction to terrible threats and terrible repressive legislation and policies by the Harper government. But maybe talk a little bit about what's going on up there.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you brought this up. It is actually something really important, and perhaps some listeners have heard about the Idle No More movement that really blossomed over the last couple of years. That was in response to the ruling party in Canada, the Conservative Party, pushing through some legislation that was really directly targeting environmental protections and also territorial sovereignty within Indigenous communities. And in response, we saw a massive upsurge of Indigenous protest and resistance, not just on reserves, not just in rural areas, but in cities as well, where people were holding round dances in shopping malls, people were blockading highways, and there was just a kind of wonderful explosion of creative, disruptive action, as well as a kind of cultural revitalization that's been an ongoing project in Canada for a long time. And so that kind of Isle No More activity has really, in many ways, created, I think, a wonderful new space to be thinking about issues around Indigenous struggles, Indigenous sovereignty, which in some ways I think have a different character of different prominence within the Canadian context. But at the same time, those struggles have really connected in important ways with fights against resource extraction and resource transportation, particularly these pipeline construction projects from the tar sands area in northern Alberta going mostly to the west through British Columbia, but also now increasingly there's some projects that are going to the east. And all of those pipeline projects go across traditional Indigenous territories. And so a lot of those communities have been really on the front lines of trying to blockade that kind of resource extraction and transport. And in the case, for example, of the Minnesotan Action Camp in British Columbia, which is basically set up directly in the path of a proposed pipeline, they're really holding it down. And I think in many ways, the fate of the climate justice movement is deeply connected to our ability to stand in alliance with those kinds of Indigenous struggles. I think it's very promising.
And you serve on the board of the Institute for Anarchist Studies, and I read some talking about your book. It says it engages a convergence of anti-authoritarian radicalism and broader-based movements in the U.S. and Canada. Talk a minute about anti-authoritarian radicalism and the convergence with broader-based movements.
So this is a very big question, but that convergence, I think, is based on the kind of resurgence of anarchist politics in the last few decades, as they've been connected to the global justice movement, but earlier ones as well, like direct action environmentalism in Earth First, for example, or direct action AIDS organizing in the 80s and 90s related to groups like ACT UP. But that, I think there has really been a kind of renewed anarchist politics that's been connected to many of these upsurges, and we certainly saw it within the Occupy movement, a kind of renewed interest in anarchism and a renewed commitment to trying to use some of the principles and practices that have become really central to anarchist politics in the last few decades, things like large-scale direct action or commitments to directly democratic organizing practices, like general assemblies in the case of Occupy, but also this commitment to trying to manifest our values through how we organize, right? To carry our visions into what we're doing and to try and in some way demonstrate our commitment to a new world and what that new world could look like through how we're doing what we're doing. But I think there's also been some of this convergence between anti-authoritarianism and broader-based movements in movements like the movement against the prison industrial complex, where there's really an important prison industrial complex abolitionist politics that's been developing that's trying to fight really against all forms of incarceration, surveillance, and policing, and is really connecting those in important ways to a radical vision of a transformed society and very much a critique of the state and state violence more generally as it's connected to all the other kinds of social hierarchies that structure our society. So those are just a couple of examples of where I see some of this convergence of broader movements and varieties of anti-authoritarian politics, not just anarchism, but other kinds too.
So we only have a couple minutes left. So you're going to be speaking in Portland tomorrow and Thursday. And so it looks like part of, you're doing some public events specifically, and you're also doing some events specifically with social justice organizing groups like with Jobs with Justice. I see that that's obviously part of your goal for the tour.
That's right. Yeah. The idea behind this tour was actually not so much to sell the book as to try and create spaces where we can come together and talk about some of the big, deep questions that we're engaged with as we try and work for social justice and try and learn from each other as we're doing that.
Okay, well, we only have time left to once again announce. I'm speaking again with Chris Dixon, author of Another Politics, talking across today's transformative movements, who's doing a tour coming across the Northwest through Oregon in the next few days. He's going to be tomorrow and Thursday in Portland. And then he's going to be November 7th in Corvallis at noon at Oregon State University. And then the 10th in Eugene. at Lane Community College and the University of Oregon. All this information is up on our website at kboo.fm/content/news-in-depth, or just go to today's date in the schedule and look up under this program. Thank you very much for Chris for speaking with us.
Paul, it's been my great pleasure. Thanks so much.
Okay. And that's News in Depth this evening for KBOO News. This is Paul Rowland. Stay tuned for special election coverage coming up here on KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor My Name is Rachel Corey, a play based on the diaries and letters of an activist killed in 2003 when she was acting as a human shield between an Israeli bulldozer and a Palestinian home. My Name is Rachel Corey shows on Sunday, November 9th at 7 p.m. at the Elliott Chapel of the First Unitarian Church, 1034 Southwest 13th Avenue in Portland. There will be a discussion following the play with Cindy and Craig Corey, the actress and the producer. Again, that's My Name is Rachel Corey, Sunday, November 9th, 7 p.m. at the Elliott Chapel of the First Unitarian Church in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 6 p.m. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next is this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com. Also, this program has been made possible by Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day,